question about mapping and tracing?
Yes.
What I was hearing, I think Chris saying before, sort of had to do with the idea that the map can affect the tracing. Maps can sort of change the course of tracing. Mm-hmm. And the example, I've only been in Beijing 2 weeks or 10 days or something, so you'll have to sort of bear with me here. But I'm thinking about all these new subway lines that have been opened and how that sort of changed flows of traffic, probably overnight. And when I think of a tracing, I'm thinking of all these cigarette butts that are lying everywhere. So people are, you know what, driving along, biking along, walking along, and leaving cigarette butts everywhere, and those are the little tracings. And all of a sudden, you create a bunch of new subway lines, and everybody has a quick butt before they get on the subway. There's butts all over the place, and these tracings have taken on a radically new form because of this new mapping of the city. My question is, can tracings affect the map?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Is the map,
the subway is both map and trace, yeah. Right? Because it's a map of like where people are going, but it's also like the cars coming by, like that's a trace of where people are going too.
Right.
You know?
Well, everything can be a map and or it depends on like perspective and approach.
Right.
And also they built the subway lines along desire paths in the city. You know what I'm saying? Like,
always comes
by the Kama Sutra oil.
Oh, not really. I mean, some of like the number 5 line, you know, didn't really lead to anywhere, but now it leads to one of the largest residential developments in Asia on the northern end. And before that, it was just farm fields, and now they're building.
So
now
but they knew
plans
beforehand, like the developers knew beforehand.
Oh, absolutely.
The subway was
coming.
Right,
they're
right.
They built.
It,
I mean, they built
that,
in
right.
conjunction with
yeah.
the like free spaces
no,
where they could build.
It all together.
I think that we
yeah,
can't
yeah.
kind of binarize mapping and tracing because I kind of feel like they're both. Had this sense of, I just don't think it's quite so helpful to binarize it, you know, to say
yeah.
like...
Yeah,
that's a dialectic in and of itself.
Yeah.
Mapping and tracing is not, I mean, it's a process of observation and sort of, you know, phenomenology
creation.
And then an abstraction from that. And then it's a give and take, I think. I think it's a process that we're all sort of affected by, too. I mean, it's just... Part of growth in a strange way, or not the growth, but you know, it's fundamental to sort of human experience in a strange way is to extrapolate from our tracings and to map, but then to at the same time like learn anew in a strange way, and that's part of the dialectic of it.
It freaks me out.
Okay, this is the concluding paragraph of the essay. The question addressed to architects, urban planners, and placemakers is how to operate with the space, which is traced at the same time as it is lived, and how to use this tracing to understand and eventually create more relationships between those who inhabit it, how to allow them to have access to and decide about their common tracing, which is also the condition of their indeterminate community. Can we like unpack that question a little and figure out what exactly is being asked here?
Well, what is interesting for me about that is then it sort of ask the question of the productivity of a tracing. Whereas if we talked before, I was understanding tracing in a sort of like past tense to sort of analyze things that have already, remnants that have already been left, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then if you turn it into an urban planning perspective, it's like, how can we analyze these things to create something positive, to generate new relationships, new economic benefit for whatever developer or whatever? And that's where I find that these things can have a positive effect, hopefully. And that's, I think, the point that she's getting at.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, though, is how can you do that without a specific agenda?
Right.
Because all of these forces that are involved in the urban planning process, for example, are filled with so many sort of different kinds of agendas and plans of like where people should go or where can the most money be made or, you know, all of these things. So how do you use it in a I don't want to say non-intentive, but in a sort of more open flow.
Well, that's like always, that's like the basic challenge, I feel like, of architecture and urban planning. It's like the idea of an indeterminate community is like completely opposed to the idea of creating a built environment.
Right.
And so the challenge is to foster indeterminacy while sort of, well, I mean, well, what is the goal?
While meeting, like, sort of you know, immediate demands for
like
for
basic living, well, for profit, but also for basic needs for for shelter.
And
for, like,
well, also you're talking about like a hope for a positive goal, a positive or hoping for a positive end is agenda in itself,
right?
And oftentimes those positives aren't positive, but then what is a positive?
right.
Can I ask another question before we talk more about Beijing or related to Beijing? Two paragraphs back, she brings up the inoperative community, the unavailable community, the coming community, etc. From Nazi and Agamben, etc. Can we just talk about the impossible community as it relates to Beijing? Because as a new person here, I find that really a really interesting question, what you guys think. Beijing. What that means to you guys here as people who live in Beijing, that's all. What is the impossible community or the coming community or the unavailable community?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, she's bringing all these concepts from these other theorists. And...
what's the impossible community?
Do you mean the indeterminate community?
Well, she throws that label on at the end as her sort of spin on those other communities, Agamben's community and Nazi's community.
Mm-hmm. I've only read Agamben.
Mm-hmm. And I can't say I understand it really well, except for the fact that they're...
What's who's the other one?
What, Jean-Luc Nassi?
Nassi. Yeah, I've read Agamben, by the way.
And... you know, very surface understanding is just how do we create community that embraces otherness, first of all? How do we create community that eliminates some of those problems of language that you talked about earlier that create otherness? And I think what she's trying to get at with the autistic thing is that perhaps this provides a model for how we can create this idea of community in a contemporary context.
It's about how the community can exist outside of these sort of flows of the nation state, right? She's sort of moving against the idea of empire and wanting to look at community via other sort of flows, I would imagine.
Mm. Yeah, but the whole basis of empire is its ability to embrace hybridity. I mean, that was kind of one of the fundamental characteristics of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if it's as simple as just saying, okay, we embrace hybridity now.
That's the postmodern question.
Well, there you go. And so I would...